And when you're able to take a confirmation and to turn that into an affirmation, it not only says there is a truth about us, but it immediately attaches a goodness to that truth. Confidence is simply defined as this: the ability to believe that it's good. That's it. You sit in a chair. Do you inspect every chair at every restaurant you sit in? Nope. Why? Because you trust the chair is good. Does it have four legs? Yep. If you go to sit at a chair at a restaurant that has three legs, my guy's not sitting in it. Why? Chair's not good. You have no confidence because it's not good. Self-confidence is the ability to look in the mirror and believe I am good. But the goodness comes from teasing out the stories to go, am I believing the one told to me, or am I believing the one that I actually think is true about myself? But they're absolutely interconnected and woven together.
My name is Jake Thompson, your Chief Encouragement Officer, and this is the Compete Every Day Podcast, a show designed to encourage and equip you with the tools to build a winning mindset so you can build your winning life. Text podcast to 972-945-9113 to join our Morning Motivation Club, and visit CompeteEveryday.com for past podcast episodes and to learn more about our resources and gear for ambitious people who are ready to start winning. Welcome to the show. Good morning, Competitor Nation. It's Jake, your Chief Encouragement Officer, and I'm excited today that you're going to get to meet my friend, Rocky Garza. Rocky and I met a handful of years ago, thanks to our mutual friend, Dean Zhu, and just have kind of stayed in touch online, stayed around each other's circle, and Rocky has been doing some really cool work lately around confidence, around battling imposter syndrome within his coaching business. The man just has a passion for helping people find some clarity on a few of the things holding them back and step into more of their potential, we'll say, as a leader. And so today's conversation, we talk about Rocky's background, talk about some of the challenges he endured growing up, where some of those originally bad habits came from, and how now he's learned through years of work and therapy and other things to work through those habits and those internal self-talk, self-belief, those negative stories holding him back, and now how he's helping others do the same. And so it's an insightful conversation. We get into a ton of things that maybe it's going to spark something with you today. Maybe it's going to poke and prod at a story you've been telling yourself that perhaps is not the most beneficial for where you're going. And Rocky's going to share a few ways that we can change those internal stories. And so I'm incredibly glad you're here. Hey, I got a question before Rocky comes on. Are you on the weekly Leaders Advantage newsletter list? Are you getting my Saturday morning weekly email? Originally, we called this email Weekends Separate Winners, and that subtitle and theme is still there. But over the past few months, we've retitled that the Leaders Advantage because that's what I want the Saturday email to be. A way to build your competitive advantage in your career, a way to build your mindset, increase your leadership influence, and start hitting some of the career goals you have. And so every Saturday morning, you'll get a short email from me with a story, with a, as we call it, on the practice field, putting it into practice. How do you take action on this concept? And a few things that I've found throughout the week, reading, listening to podcasts, seeing some YouTube videos that I just want to share with you. And so if you want to get signed up and start building your competitive advantage as a leader to increase your impact and the results you're getting, all you got to do is head over to alwayslead.ing. That's www.alwayslead.ing. Get signed up. It's free. And every Saturday morning, you're going to get a new way to build your advantage. So I hope I'll get to see you this upcoming Saturday if you're not signed up. And now let's welcome into the show, Rocky Garza. Rocky, welcome to the podcast, my man.
Thank you, sir. It's good. Long time no see. It's good to see you again.
Long time no see. As I was laughing as we were getting on air, man, was it pre-COVID that we had coffee in Dallas? Probably.
Yeah. Oh, it had to be. I mean, it had to be like maybe early 2019.
Yeah.
Somewhere in there.
I was just starting on the speaking side and we got connected probably through Dean. Good old Dean Zhu. And so, man, a lot's changed for both of us since then. Incredibly excited to have you on the show and talk about, but I know you love people. I know you love people discovering a little bit of what's inside of them, working through a lot of their mess. And so before we dive into some of the work you're doing now, coaching, especially coaching leaders, let's flashback. Y'all had you and your wife had a photography business. You were doing really well with it, but there was something in you that was calling you in a different direction. So take me back to kind of the beginning of some of this journey down the coaching path, through your photography, entrepreneurial, your ministry, and where you've gotten to today.
Yeah. Great question. So I won't go back to the day I was born, but we'll go back a little while. So yeah, I mean, I think right out of college, I was a summer camp director at a place called Sky Ranch out in East Texas. Which was super fun, you know, like your first job out of college, it's summer camp and you get paid $26,000 a year. Who doesn't want that? So, it was really great. Did that, left there again, kind of in this, like, okay, this is super fun. I don't want to be a summer camp director forever. Came to Dallas back in 2008 joined the pastoral staff at a church up in North Dallas called Chase Oaks. Had a great experience there. But really for me in that, I met my wife in that time. We started dating, we got married. And I think really this like exploration of, okay, I know I'm good with words. I know I'm good with people. I know I can get on stage and use a variety of words to induce some sort of emotion in someone. But at that point in my life, I was 26, had good hair, one tattoo. I was like, man, this is like my vibe, you know? But I think in that scenario, it's like something is not clicked in, because when I get off stage, all I can think about is how wonderful it feels when security stands behind me and people shake my hand at the side door and say, you did such a great job. And when I think about the fullness of being on stage, the 5,000 person church talking about God, that's a really crappy reason to get off stage every time, is to go, I can't wait for them to tell me that I'm good, that I'm great, and they really appreciate me. And so I don't know if I had like that level of clarity, but I had enough of that to know something about this isn't it. And so that's what's prompted my wife and I to start our photography business. She was an architect. She had quit her job. She had started shooting weddings. And so we did it together. And I think we were both kind of like, we don't even know who we are or what we want. So let's just like start a business, because that's always a good idea. But really for us, photography was, you know, you work mostly on the weekends when you're shooting a wedding, you have a photo shoot during the week, but you have a lot of explorative time during Monday through Friday. So we both spent quite a few years in therapy one-on-one during that 5-year period of being photographers. This was pre us having kids, which I look back and go, really for us, photography was about learning business, learning personal brand, and ultimately learning about who we were. Found out we were pregnant with our son back in 2014. And we're like, we don't, you know, about a decade ago. And like, we don't want to shoot weddings the rest of our life. What do we want to do? And really my wife said, what do you want to do? And although I'd like to believe I said it this eloquently, Jake, we all know I did not. I said something like, if I could take my life experience, marry that with 8 years of ministry, marry that with 5 years of entrepreneurship, if I could attempt to become an expert at anything at the end of my life, I would love to be a people expert. And so I just said, hey, I'm gonna try that. I like people. I like values. I like strengths. I like engaging with others. People seem to trust me in a very short amount of time. So I went to the creative entrepreneur space, because that was a space I came out of. And I was like, hey, did you see our business? Did you like that? You want one of those? Let's go. And I remember like the first client I ever had was like, how about I take you on a retreat, me and you one-on-one. I take you through a process I have to help you uncover and discover a language for who you are. We'll build a personal brand off of that. Figure out what problem you solve for your client. Bam, let's go to work and we'll do coaching for 6 months. A 100% just making it up, right? Like, I like this. Let's see who will say yes. That's kind of what started this a decade ago. It was like, let's just see what happens. And I know I care about that. And so, you know, you do anything for 10 years, and we have a process called identity mapping, which is we've created to help give you self-clarity. We have the imposter within and the confidence method that helps you create self-confidence. We've got the 365 formula for daily habits. And so all of that has come over the last decade of really saying, I deeply care about people. I've spent enough of my time trying to be the hero and I hate it. I've also spent enough of my time trying to be the martyr and I hate it. What if I was just a human? What if I was just an individual who had a deep sense of clarity of self and was willing to not sacrifice myself for the love of others, but to serve other people in the hopes and benefit that they could find the same clarity and freedom that I did? And so that's been through speaking, coaching, and consulting for the last 10 years.
Okay, so you teased it a little bit about your life experiences, because as I've heard you mention on other podcasts, it wasn't as much a negative, it just was what it was. You were forced growing up to build relationships pretty consistently, and I would love for you to share a little bit about that, because I can see dots connected into how you interact and engage with people and are able to connect with them quickly now because of what you went through as a child. Yeah. And so talk to us a little bit about that, because for a lot of people, and I don't think it's very much our listeners based on knowing kind of our audience, but a lot of people they interact with, we look at things we endured or experienced as a child. And obviously going through the work of therapy has helped, but we see it as our default excuse for why we won't change today or why we are the way we are versus seeing it's part of the reason we want to change. And so tell us a little bit about yours, because I find it pretty inspiring. And I remember we talked briefly about it over coffee.
Yeah. I appreciate the question. I'm a really firm believer, and this is not just Rocky opinion. This is if you look at the trajectory and the development of a scale of a human being between the ages of 0 and 18, those are typically broken into 3-year chunks or 6-year chunks. And because the math's on 18. So you either go 0, 3, 3, 6, 6, and so forth, or you go 0, 6, 6, 12, 6, 12, 18. And each of those are different significant developmental stages in a human being. Specifically, the 6 through 12 range is where we come out of we come out of what is referred to as the absorption phase, which is what happens between 0 and 6. We're sponges. We just soak it all in, right? And somewhere between 5, 6, 7 in that range, we begin to test everything we've absorbed. We begin to test that on the world to go, I wonder if that's really true. Like, my mom said the stove was hot. She was right. You know, they told me not. So we see that period, which is why kindergarten, first grade, second grade, we kind of have this weird age. So for me, if I look at the scope of my life between the ages of 6 and 12, which I would strongly encourage you as a listener to think about your life between the ages of 6 and 12, I went to 13 schools before I graduated high school. Most of those were all pre-seventh grade, so which is right about 12 years old. Between 6 and 12 for me, I was at a new school every year, if not 2 or 3 schools every year in different cities all across the state of Texas. And so with that, my mom's been married and divorced a few times. And so it was for a job she took or a relationship she was in, and we'd moved to a new place in a new school. And so I learned very quickly, again, this is not the 7-year-old Rocky talking. This is the 40-year-old Rocky through lots of counseling, therapy, a decade of self-clarity, talking back about 7-year-old Rocky. Yep. So let's be clear about that. But 7-year-old Rocky knew when he walked into school, hey, I don't know how long I'm going to be here, but I do know if I don't walk in and I don't stand confidently and I don't use my words and talk and build a connection and find a friend for a sleepover within 10 days, this is going to be a lonely place. And I refuse for this to be a lonely place because I don't want to be alone, because my mom is doing the best she can and working as hard as she can. And so I'm a latchkey kid who comes home and lets myself in at 7 years old off the bus for 2 hours until my mom gets home and the neighbor who checks on me, because that's what we had to do. There wasn't a choice. And that's not to make my mom out to be the enemy. That's to go, wait a second, that was the reality of life. So it's not woe is me. What an incredible opportunity to learn how to make that PB&J at age 6. Boy, I was like just snacking on everything. Nobody could stop me, right? But if I look at my life and go, I learned very quickly, and we'll use this purposefully because we're in audio form for those that are listening to us. Learning the pause really helps. Learning when to engage someone and to increase your rate of speed in order to draw them in so they have to pay attention, so that when you really want to slow down and have them, and that was 6 to 12 for me, was learning how to refine a skill set that didn't make me isolated, alone, and afraid. And so as an adult, I have learned, well, I have a gift and a skill, call it 50-50 nature nurture, that I have discovered that my voice can be used for multiple purposes. And be very clear with you, at 40, I have used it for a lot of purposes, some of which I have had to ask for forgiveness and some of which I've been forgiven and yet to be reconciled. Okay, so let's be very clear about all that. However, I go back to that phase, and I think it's a beautiful question you ask, and I really encourage listeners to go back and think about that time, because I could either say, because I've done this in my life, well, that was just how it was for me. And so, no, I'm going to put you at arm's distance. I'm not going to let you in. I'm not going to be vulnerable. I'm not going to share who I am, because you're going to leave like everybody else. Because I've had those thoughts. I think those thoughts. At 40, I've been married 15 years, have 2 kids, go on a date with my wife every Wednesday night. And if you think that the magical thought that my wife isn't going to somehow leave me for no apparent reason is gone, you're crazy. Of course it's there. But I got to have something to come back to go, wait a second, what's the reality of all of that? Is that 8-year-old Rocky who's afraid he's going to be at home alone? Or is that 40-year-old Rocky who spent 32 years of work building a life that he deeply believes in because he understands who he is? It's not an excuse to say, woe is me. Rather, I think it's a beautiful through line and narrative to be able to say, how did I land here? And what will I do today? Not tomorrow, not a week, and not 6 weeks from now. What will I do today to begin to change the trajectory of where I believe my life needs to go and where I want it to go? Because the only thing I can control is the story that I tell myself about myself right now.
So let me ask you about that. Just what popped in my head as well as you're going down this path, because you worked in ministry as well. And so battling that, I would say, constant fear of abandonment in a ministry setting, how did you balance that, right? Because the constant focus has to be on servanthood, essentially, versus, you know, keeping people close. And we know from just human interactions that a lot of times our quote unquote friends tell us what we want to hear, because it's more about them afraid of us leaving them than being willing to tell us the truth out of love. So how did you balance that? I'm curious, just because I know it, whatever skills you built there have helped you now in your coaching practice.
Totally. Totally. Well, I think, let me be very clear. I don't think I balanced anything. So I think that's why it's not my job anymore. So, I think I didn't balance anything, but however, for a while, I was able to mask vulnerability by using disclosure in order to build temporary false depth relationships to keep me safe. That's a lot of words. We'll make it simpler. Yep. I wasn't vulnerable, meaning I didn't actually share who I was, where I was, and what I was feeling. I was great at disclosure. I can wrap up a great story in 90 seconds with deep emotion that feels wild to you. That was my everyday life, and tell it to 1,000 people and feel zero connection to you. But I know that you are longing for a scenario that you are unwilling to disclose the kind of information that I'm willing to disclose. Therefore, we can build a false, temporary, deep relationship where you think you know me so well, and I told you the same thing I was telling everybody else. Now, at 26, 24, 25, 26, I didn't really know that's what I was doing. I was surviving. I was trying to build connections. And if I shared my story, people seemed to like that. So I shared my story because people liked that and they liked me, and that allowed them to know them. And it wasn't all bad. It wasn't all directly manipulative. It wasn't all like, oh, let me think about these things to see how I can woo these people. That was never the goal. However, I think hindsight, looking back, I didn't really balance anything. I felt like my life was on fast forward, and somebody put me in a seat in a position that I really shouldn't have been in, and I really shouldn't have been leading people. And then they put the fast forward button, and then there was no time to slow down or look back. So I was literally making it up as I went along, trying to stay ahead of the quote unquote curve to keep myself in a position. And I think that's part of the reason when I got offered, the reason I left the ministry as a profession, was because I got offered a teaching pastor job at 27 of a huge church to say, we want you to teach 26 weekends a year. It's your only job, and we're going to pay for seminary, and we'll bring somebody in and train you one-on-one, and you just talk for us. And it felt so overwhelming to think about, like, I have to get into a position where I'm going to do this 26 times a year. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just being me, and me is tired. And I am exhausted, and I cannot keep doing this. I got to figure something else out. And so it wasn't this overwhelming clarity on that end. And there wasn't a balance of the serving people, but not losing yourself. I lost myself because I gave it all to hoping that you would love me. Thankfully, that one, I think God is gracious. And two, my wife is amazing. And she recognized, hey, I don't know if this is for us. I don't, not God per se, but I don't know that me being a pastor's wife and you being a pastor is really our space. And the freedom in that to go, I can continue to move forward. I'm not walking away from something. I'm going to walk adjacent to something. And I think that analogy plays well in a lot of areas of our life. But I think I didn't have to walk away from it, but I could walk adjacent to it and realize there is a place for me in this world that allows me to be myself fully, vulnerably, not simply disclosing. This may not be it, but I'm going to have to go on a path of exploration to figure it out.
So there's two things you said there, and I'm going to pull it at a couple of threads with it. The first, people leaving ministry. I'm curious about just how you handled that transition from a figure people look to and having those relationships. And a lot of times from the outside, obviously as a fellow believer and involved as well, from the outside, you typically, when you see people leave the ministry, you assume something negative, right? You assume there's something going on behind closed doors. They got in trouble. They're being forced out. It's not necessarily, oh, you're leaving this. Isn't this supposed to be your calling? How did that transition to the photography business go from an interpersonal relationship as well as an internal managing that? Because you knew it was the right move. You and your wife knew it was the right move for your family, but that doesn't mean there's not friction in that process.
I think I was wildly fortunate that my leadership, and specifically my boss, who was the executive pastor there, he still is an incredible, I'm like a mentor of mine, incredible human being, said, what do you want to do? If you don't want to do this, what do you want to do? And I said, I think I want to be a photographer. And he said, what are you talking about? And I said, I think I need a break. And I think I want to go with my wife. And I think we want to try to create a photography business where we can impact people. We're going to be wedding photographers. We're going to be with on the most intimate day. We're going to invite them to dinner. We had this whole plan of what we're going to do. I said, well, I think I want to do that. And he said, if that's what this was, probably November, December-ish. He said, if you want to do that, then I said, I think I will, you help me for 4 weeks, make a plan and a transition. Will you interview every person and every candidate that's going to take your job? And then will you, I want you to resign on January 1st. And then can we pay you a salary and benefits for the first 6 months that you're gone so you can go build a thing you really want? And that's unheard of. That's absurd. Yeah. However, that singular decision, and not the pay necessarily, but that we love you, care about you, and believe in who you are more than we believe in your ability to perform for us here, was absolutely game changing for us, and especially for me in that role. So sure, there were some relationships that people didn't understand, and kids were sad, and parents were upset, and there were staff members that were like, I was really hoping you were going to be the next teaching pastor and preach here for the next 15 years and so on. Like, there was definitely that. But yeah, that's take away ministry and replace it with being a dentist, and a dentist moves and you're sad because he cleaned your teeth. I mean, that's to come with any major transition, right? Yep. However, I think what set it up to be successful and allowed me freedom was that those in my life who cared about me and loved me and had the position to help set me up successfully did so beautifully. And I think that helped manage that tension. And I'm at that point, I was still very much a very clear, very direct, say things how I want to say them kind of person. And so I was very easy. The last time I preached, like, I told everybody what I was doing and where I was going and why I was leaving and why I wanted to do that, and that I'd still see him. And my wife still was serving with the nursery for 4 months after I stepped down in my role, and we still went there for a little while. And she went more than I did, because it was a little bit of an awkward. It was weird for me to be there. People asking me questions, and I'm like, I actually don't know that anymore. I don't work here. You know, like, I didn't want to do that, but we were still involved for 4 or 5 months after we decided to make this transition, which I think that also helped as well. It wasn't we're out, we'll see, and we're moving states. It was, but after 4 months, we did stop going to church there because we moved down to downtown from North Dallas. And so it didn't really make sense anymore. And there were so many things, but I think that did help in that space. Cause I agreed, so many times in ministry, you step away, you step adjacent, or you quote unquote step down. There's a lot of ways you can step. Yep. The clarity about which direction you're stepping, though, I think is really, really important.
Okay, cool. And the other thing that we've talked about, or you've talked about, and I've heard this theme echoing, is kind of that fear of abandonment and fear of being found out, the imposter syndrome to a degree. And all of that is almost on the opposite end of the spectrum of confidence, which is something that I know is a really passionate area for you. Mm-hmm. And so talk about that journey into one, self-confidence, but then starting to see the dots of, like, I'm not the only one suffering or struggling with this, and struggle is probably a better word. And I'm seeing it in leaders specifically. How do I transition into doing more of that?
Yeah. Great question. So I think if we think about confidence and we think about the imposter syndrome, okay, those are kind of the two. We tend to look at those on a linear curve, and they're kind of polar opposites, right? They're on a dichotomy of you that have one or the other. I think in the last decade or so, to me, it's more of a horseshoe. So imposter syndrome and confidence are actually significantly closer together than we think they are on this trajectory of how we get from one to the other. They're very similarly related. And so I think what I've tried to do is say, okay, I know for me, fear of abandonment, fear of being left, I can get you to love me. If I can get you to like me, I can perceive that you won't leave me, and then I'll just do whatever I need to do to keep you happy. And then you'll stick around. Fantastic. That sounds great and like an exhausting life, but let's choose it anyway, right? I think what I've discovered in myself, and then specifically to your point, as I've coached and talked to and spoken and developed leaders, is most of the time when we get to the crux of imposter syndrome, and let's talk about leaders specifically. So we're already in a position, we have some influence, we're movers and we're shakers, we feel good about what we're doing, our skills and our tasks feel dialed in. And then occasionally there's this moment of like, I don't think I am who I think that I think they're going to find out that I don't really know what I think that I'm doing. I just happen to get lucky a few times, you know? I think in that, though, the framework that I have, we call it the confidence method, is to be able to say, okay, hold on. How did we land here with this story? And whose story is it? And where do we take this story from here? So in my perspective, there's two narratives at play all the time. the stories told to us about us, and the stories we tell ourselves about ourselves. I believe those are the two main narratives that are happening in our life. Again, stories told to us about us. Those are the things through words and actions that other people have communicated to us. Rocky, you're so this. Rocky, you're to this, T-O-O. A lot of you're always this, you're never this. Things that are communicated to us. I've been told my whole life, Rocky, you're too intense. Rocky, you ask too many questions. Rocky, calm down. Rocky, you talk too fast. Rocky, why are you my business? Okay. I've also been told, Rocky, you're too emotional. You can't be that emotional and like be a real man, right? Those are words that have been communicated to me.
Yep.
Actions. My mom communicated to me that men and jobs were more important than I was because she chose them over me majority of my childhood. Does that mean she didn't choose me? No, that's foolish. Does that mean that it was communicated to me that I was third on the rung? Yes. All of those are stories told to me about me. Now, every human being has hundreds of stories told to us about us. That I don't believe necessarily is causing imposter syndrome or a lack of confidence. The lack of confidence comes from when we take a story we tell ourselves about ourselves, how Rocky has taken that, applied that, and communicates that to himself over the course of his life. When those two stories collide, I use the word collision on purpose because on any collision, there's always some kind of impact. On the collision of those two stories, I believe in that moment, we either find the truth, confidence, and affirmation about ourselves, or we find that lowercase t truth, meaning we think it's true, but it's really not, fear, doubt, obstacle, insecurity, imposter in that collision. And I think it is in that moment that we have a choice. Rocky, you're too intense. Rocky, calm down. Hey, my guy, you have so many questions. What's going on? You don't even have a resume, my guy. You never had a W-2 in your life. And you're going to go talk to corporate CEOs at Zillow? Come on, bro. You don't belong there. Rocky says to himself, right? Now the story I told myself about myself. Hey, yo, I actually don't have a resume and didn't get a degree. Haven't actually led a business. So this is interesting. This is interesting here how they got to this place where these two stories collide, right? I have an option. The confidence method allows us to work through this. What is the lie? In those two stories for myself, what is the lie? Is the lie that I am intense? No, I'm pretty intense. Is the lie that I am unqualified because of my lack of paper that says I'm qualified? No, that's okay. That doesn't make any sense. So what's the lie? The lie is that I have taken a story told to me about me, which is almost always a greater representation of the storyteller than it is the main character of the story. And I have internalized that and attempted to find a way for it to be true by the things I'm seeing from other people. As opposed to saying, how about I take something and just simply confirm it first. A confirmation is a truth. Hey, Rocky, you are intense. My guy, that's true. Can't knock that one, okay? However, what we say in the confidence method is where the confidence comes out of the imposter. I'm intense, oh no. To I am intense, comma, it's just a word thing, I like words. And we end that sentence with, and I am good. And when you're able to take a confirmation and to turn that into an affirmation, it not only says there is a truth about us, but it immediately attaches a goodness to that truth. Confidence is simply defined as this, the ability to believe that it's good. That's it. You sit in a chair. Do you inspect every chair at every restaurant you sit in? Nope. Why? Because you trust the chair is good. Does it have four legs? Yep. If you go to sit at a chair at a restaurant that has three legs, my guy's not sitting in it. Why? Chair's not good. You have no confidence because it's not good. Self-confidence is the ability to look in the mirror and believe I am good. But the goodness comes from teasing out the stories to go, am I believing the one told to me? Or am I believing the one that I actually think is true about myself? But they're absolutely interconnected and woven together.
Okay, so there's a couple of things there that I want to make sure the audience caught. Two, I want to ask you about as well. The first thing is the thing said to you tell you more about the storyteller than the person receiving. And that's easy because most people tend to project insecurities and things onto others. And it has nothing to do with you who's receiving it. It has to do with them. And understanding that is a big piece of it, right? And part 100%. Of that, I love Don Miguel Ruiz's The Four Agreements, right? Never take anything mm-hmm. personally, plays into part of that. The second thing I'm curious where, because you mentioned, you know, confidence is that good. Where do you see the competent side playing into it? Because to your point, right, a four-legged chair, you have the trust that it is competent to hold you, whereas a three-legged chair, you don't. So tell me where that competent comes in. Competency comes in with good in terms of having that confidence, or perhaps that's more of the external confidence versus the internal.
Yeah, I think that competence would be the confirmation. The goodness would be the affirmation. So I always use the example of like when I book a flight with American Airlines, right? What happens? I get an email, and what kind of email do I get? I get a confirmation email.
Yep.
Do you know how many more flights people would book if I got affirmation emails instead? Right? Like, but they don't give me an affirmation email. They don't tell me my flight's going to be good. They just tell me, hey, there's a chance you got a flight. Yep. We can confirm that. So I think that's competency. Did I buy a ticket? I did. And I got an email that says I bought a ticket. Okay. Hey, can you tell me about the journey? Ooh, can't do that. Don't know about how the journey is going to be. It's probably not going to be good. How about let's just stick with you do have a ticket. Okay.
Yeah.
I think even though we're talking about airplane tickets, I think it's the same for us. The competency is, do we know what's true? Do we have the competency to go, I am intense. We can say competency. We could say self-awareness. We could say the ability to see what's truth or what's real, or there's a variety of words we could use, right? Do I know what is true? Really true. Not the one told to me about me, but what I know to be true about who I am, right? I know that I'm emotional. That's who I am. I don't know how to not be. It just happens. I can't control. It's just me. That's the truth. Am I competent enough to know that I'm going to experience visceral and outward emotion? Yes. However, that doesn't mean I always think that it's a good thing. Doesn't mean I'm always confident in it. Truth and confidence. Well, we have to add an element. How do we go from true to confident? We have to find the space where we go, wait a second, I do believe there is a goodness in this truth. So my competency says has four legs. I know that's true. Let me sit down. Oh, interesting. What a good chair, right? I think the thing is similar for us. So to break those two things down, I think the competence would be the confirmation. The goodness would be the affirmation.
Okay. And that makes sense as well on that. Okay. So along kind of this process, you mentioned the affirmation side, and we know, I'm curious from your perspective, like saying something once has a benefit, but it's kind of, as we talk about, it's like a Lego block, right? By itself, not a whole lot you can do with it. You got to stack it consistently. So how do you coach or talk to people about really building the repetition into that specific affirmation so it becomes something they truly start to believe and change that internal story?
Great question. So, let's go back just a step. We go through the process. We see the stories, we find the truth, we see the truth. Great. To put in the daily practice, it's what we call the 3-6-5 formula. And it's to do, pick three things that you're going to do 6 days a week within the first 5 minutes of waking up. And the purpose of that is to build a very, very simple, easy, process that allows us to communicate to ourselves proactively, very early on in our journey, that we do what we say we're going to do for ourselves. A part of that is, I always suggest a part of one of the 3-6-5 could be, why don't one of the first three things you do in the first 5 minutes of waking up is find a way to read over, say out loud, or recite what you'd believe your affirmations to be. This is not necessarily me in front of the mirror, like that girl 8 years ago on YouTube who was like, I like my hair, I like my dad. Now, if that's you, hey, get after it. I'm not knocking any affirmations in front of the mirror, okay? I do them occasionally myself. However, where do we go? We call it identity mapping. That's kind of our first staple process. Go back to your identity map. Go back to your affirmations in the 3-6-5 formula. Wake up. Number one, my 3-6-5 that I practice in my own life. Number one is when my alarm goes off, my feet hit the floor. That's the first thing that I do. I'm getting up. I'm not hitting it. I'm not stomping it, snoozing it. I don't care what time you get up. I'm just saying, for me, get up. Number two, I go to the kitchen and drink a glass of water, not in my bedroom. It forces me to I want to get out of this space and go in there. And then number three is I read over my affirmations. I got five affirmations I read over every morning. Those are, I'm a loving, intentional husband and father. I'm extremely wealthy and ultimately generous in all aspects of my life. I do hard things for the most good, so on and so forth. And I read those every single morning. And it's not I'm going to trick myself into believing. I don't say I'm a loving, intentional husband and father because I'm perfect all the time. No, I say I'm a loving, intentional husband and father because my affirmations represent who I am, not what I do. My goals should represent what I do. My affirmations represent who is the person who is attaining and achieving those goals. And so the repetition, the cadence, the over and over is, I want to come back to a language. There's nothing wrong with however you do your affirmations. It's not a judgment of yours. I just want to encourage folks that your affirmations, I believe, should be directly in alignment with who you are as a human, not necessarily what you always are able to accomplish, because that reminds you of the kind of person that you are that will pursue the things that you want.
Highly, highly agree with that, especially when it comes to who you are. Because if you are a disciplined individual, you're not going to hit the snooze button. You're going to take actions that reinforce that decision. You're going to hear the alarm and have your feet hit the floor, especially. Okay, Raghi, man, this has been a ton of fun this morning. We've kind of dived into a few topics, but I know we've got listeners who are probably interested in learning more. They're interested in, maybe they're struggling with the confidence aspect. Maybe they're a leader looking to get a better grasp maybe of what's going on within them so they can influence how they show up more effectively for their teams. Where are the best places to get connected with you to learn about some of your coaching programs, both kind of the online course as well as the group? And then where's the best place to connect and follow with you online?
Yeah. The best place to connect and follow online is just at Raghi Garza on Instagram. That's the best place to go. All things you need are there. Link in bio. Any other platform, if you have a preference of other platforms you like, we're on all of them. And it's just a big bald guy with eyebrows. It's me called Raghi Garza. It's just that there's not a lot of us out there. So I'm pretty easy to find. In regard to the coaching part, just RaghiGarzaCoaching.com. That'll take you directly to where all of our programs are. You can see our VIP program, which is one-on-one coaching. We got a group coaching program where you have access to all of our online content called the Get What You Want method. And we do a weekly call there every Thursday at 8 p.m. for our group coaching. And then we just launched our Raghi Garza Coaching Online, which is all of our content that you have access to. Learn on your own, learn at your own pace. We're able to see it and track it and follow up with you and send you resources. And it's a really well robust system that really allows you to be able to start at the beginning and go, who am I? And what do I believe? What do I want and need to do? And then how do I begin to apply that to the relationships in my life? And so we've created a full robust system we call the Get What You Want method, not because I want to tell you what you want, because I want you to build a life that you actually want.
Love it. Raghi, thanks so much for coming on the show this week, my man.
Actually, appreciate it.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Compete Everyday Podcast. To get in touch with the team, drop us an email to podcast@competeeveryday.com. And to find out more about our resources, content, and gear that will help you build that winning mindset so you better compete for your best life, visit competeeveryday.com.